With me is local board chair Paul Warden. Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks, Chris. And you?
I'm really good. So what I wanted to talk to you about, Paul, is empowering communities is a bit of a buzzword around the council at the moment. And, you know, it's kind of one of these things, I don't know, you kind of get fads, things come and go and people talk about these ideas. And I listened to that phrase, empowering communities, and I thought, is this just another bit of council waffle? But I mean, what's it mean from your perspective, from the board's perspective?
Oh, look, it absolutely is another bit of council waffle.
They're good at that, aren't they?
Oh, they are. They are indeed. But look, I think in the council is, on one hand, reacting to calls from community for more community control of community infrastructure and enabling community to get on and do things themselves and get away from council being the sort of big brother nanny state type scenario. And as a part of that, we've been introduced to this concept of empowered communities. So I guess to put a bit of a local lens on this local board, you know, from day one has made it quite clear that we want to see our community halls more accessible for our community, and that we have every confidence in our community and community organisations to, you know, to manage those facilities to make sure we get good use out of them. And so it sort of did align really with this new concept, which was predicated on you know, various council departments needing to save money on administration and other things. So there was an alignment there. It's been sort of wrapped up in a catch cry of empowered communities. I mean, let's claim it; it's great. At the end of the day, you know, we're actually seeing some of our community infrastructure that's getting back into community control. It'll be more accessible. We'll get better outcomes. You know, not for the facilities, but for our community. And I think I sort of take this conversation, and we might have even talked about this on the election podium, the election before last, come to think of it. My great-grandfather was involved in building the Ostend Hall just after World War I. And that was all built by volunteers with, you know, donated materials. And there was no council. And so I think back to myself, you know, here was a bit of community infrastructure which was built by the community for the community. It was well used. It was managed. There was no issue. And then at some point we've been introduced to the concept of having a community council, which has ultimately come together to, you know, to have a small rate on people to help maintain the infrastructure and presumably employ someone to make sure that the building's kept painted and the roof's cleaned and the gutters are cleaned and all those sorts of things. But at some point it's gone too many steps too far, and I think, you know, when the control of that infrastructure moves off the island and there's a loss of accountability back to the community that it benefits, it becomes an issue. So we've kind of gone like a full circle. It's great.
So, I mean, there has been talk for a long time that the halls are underutilised,
yes.
You know, sitting empty a lot of the time.
Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, I know that people were kind of concerned about the amount they had to pay to use the halls, and also the access requirements seemed very, very difficult. So how do you hope to overcome that with, you know, is there any, I mean, with the contracts that have been put in place with, say, the RSA, for example, around the Ostend Hall, are there requirements in that will make access easier and cheaper for the community, or is that completely in their hands?
Look, there will be. So we've are partway through a conversation with the RSA around how the Ostend Hall will be managed. But absolutely, I mean, there will be an expectation, and it will be outlined in that contract as to what the level of or the expectation around community access and fees, you know, and what they will be used for, where that will sit. Obviously, we're in a situation at the moment where, you know, to pick a number out of the air, the Ostend Hall might generate $5,000 a year worth of income. Which offsets maintenance and other costs. We don't want to be in a worse position as a community. So if the RSA can manage the hall, they can generate enough income to cover those costs, and they can get more use out of it. Awesome. Those are good outcomes. if we can get into a situation where anyone wanting to use the hall can wander in next door and see the secretary at the RSA and say, hey, I'm wanting to book the hall for next Saturday, is it free? And he can say, yep, it is. Here's the deposit, come and see me on the day and we'll give you the key. Suddenly, you know, it's just a whole lot. A lot of the feedback that I've had from members in the community is around it's just too hard. You know, you've got to go online, you've got to navigate a fairly clunky booking system. You've got to do it so many days in advance so that a key can be posted, you know, a swipe card can be posted, which you then have to post back. Because the person taking the booking doesn't know the individuals in the community, there's a sort of default to worst case scenario. And so if your event's going to be on a Friday or a Saturday night, half to 7 o'clock, you know, we need to employ a security guard to make sure that you're looking after the council facility, and we need to make sure that you're paying us a bond because we're going to get the council cleaners in the next day to make sure it's clean. And so I guess in a sense, if it was the, you know, over 40 years indoor bowling club, you'd like to think that there was enough flexibility and integrity and communication, which, and we have all of that within the fabric of our community. So, look, you know, there are going to be some incidents where this falls over, and that's just life. But really, we are working to get into a better place.
So that system sounds, you know, will work quite well, say with something like the Ostend Hall, where you would see a variety of different users, and, you know, yep. that kind of set up with the RSA. So something like Surfdale Hall is different though, isn't it? Because with Surfdale Hall and the Steiner School, you've yes. basically got one group occupying it pretty much all the time.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So, look, we do have the benefit of some fairly lengthy records around usage for all of the halls. And so what we're able to do with the Surfdale Hall is identify who the regular users are. So this conversation with Steiner has started with, you know, you need to sit down with the regular users of the hall and work out how you can accommodate them. And so we don't want to be anyone that's been in a space of benefiting from that infrastructure to be worse off. There's a lovely group of some of our seniors who have been involved with the Surfdale Hall from the day the Surfdale Hall arrived. And, you know, when you sit down and talk to them, they, you know, made the drapes for the hall, they donated the piano and this and that and the next thing. So, you know, there's a strong association and sense of ownership. And there's other groups that are using it. So the sort of nuance with Surfdale Hall is Steiner aren't looking to take on a licence to manage or a lease on the hall. They are merely booking it for a time slot. So there's an expectation that they'll be packing up their books and taking them home and that sort of thing. And the times either side, the building will be available for community. What it does enable is actually for Steiner, who have been having this conversation around establishing a school on the island, as long as I can remember, to actually say, look, let's give this an honest shot. Let's get some energy around this. Let's make it happen in this sort of 2-3 year window that we're doing it down here. Let's work really hard to find someone with private property that we can do this on and jump through the hurdles of consenting and other things. So, I think it's a... I think it's a gorgeous thing to be doing as a community.
And so they will still manage, will they manage the use of the hall for other people as well, or that will remain the council?
So in the case of Surfdale, that will all be managed centrally through the central booking system. So that's, you know, in a usage sense, it'll be the same as it always has been. Steiner will be booking it for certain times.
So basically just means not available yep. 9 to 4, that's Monday
right.
to Friday.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think probably people think, though, you know, a school, I mean, normally you think of a school and you think of, you know, the kids' artwork on the
yes.
walls, their work, you know, a school is more than just the kids sitting down, it's about the environment around
yes.
it. And, I mean, you know, how will that work? So, you know, you've kind of, you know, the kids want to be able to return and have their space, have their things.
Look, there is going to be a bit of a moving space around that. You know, I certainly expect that there will be some, you know, some willingness, and I think there's opportunity for Steiner to think about their infrastructure and what that might look like. But it, I don't see any of that sort of activity that you might expect in a classroom, you know, raising the ire of the other users of the hall. But it's really making sure that it's done in such a fashion that it's, you know, that it's not sort of impeding those other legitimate users. So, you know, there's going to be a sort of crinkly space in between.
So, I mean, and that's just two of a number of spaces, isn't it? There's the old library space that now occupied and managed by Waiheke Adult Learning.
Yes.
Of course, the bowling club, which will be... So what's the story with the bowling club? So the Resources Trust are both occupying and managing, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So the Resources Trust sort of taken on a lease. So they'll be occupying and managing the facility. We're in the process of refining a community outcomes plan which sits alongside the lease, which articulates the expectations of the local board around how the facility's used. So, you know, we've had an arrangement, for example, with the Sculpture on the Golf crew, who have been using that office for the last 6 months or so, and we expect them to be in there doing that until after the event next year. You know, but also when we've sort of reflected on the period of time that the local board was up there, we had the croquet club that was getting a lot of use out of the facilities and relying on the latrines there. There was a number of other groups. There's a wonderful meeting space there. If I go back even one step further to when it was the bowling club and it had the kitchen running and there was Friday night roasts, those are some of the sorts of things that we're articulating as far as expectations are concerned around that space, that it does become a positive, active community space. And in a sense, you know, yes, the Resources Trust get a benefit because they have somewhere to have an office and establish their sustainability centre. That's great. That doesn't take away from the potential to get a whole lot of other outcomes from that space for the community.
What kind of safeguards and accountabilities will there be on these groups to ensure that the rest of the community can still have access?
Yeah, so that's getting sewn in through this community outcomes plan, which sits alongside it. There's been some dialogue with council over, you know, fee schedules and that type of thing, again, to ensure that a community group which has essentially been given a fairly significant piece of community social infrastructure at a nominal rate, that it doesn't just become a machine to make money and generate income. So that will be stitched up in this community outcomes plan and in the lease agreement.
And do you see more of this happening? I mean, are there other community spaces that, you know, you'll be kind of looking at reviewing their use in the same way?
Look, we're beginning to get into a position that we're optimising use of council-controlled community space. I think there's a next step, a next conversation that we need to be having as a community and council, which sort of dovetails with this whole conversation around empowered communities, and it's a little bit of, you know, the old adage, you know, being far enough behind to be ahead. You know, but we do have some really core community infrastructure which is privately owned by community clubs on public land, and in some cases on private land. And so we need to be thinking about what's the council's obligation to support these community groups, because actually when you look at the motivations on a regional level behind council, they would very much like to see a lot of these community type functions run by community, and so I guess taking away the risk and the burden from council. And so where we've got community groups that are still in the headspace of doing that, I think it's important that we get stuck in to make sure they're supported. And you'll see recently the local boards supported the sports club in Austin with some funding, and also the Sea Scouts. And so we have a number of community you know, facilities which are privately owned, and it's there's just not a parity really between the sort of obligations on those groups as opposed to you know, the benefits that other community groups are getting. You know, even in the sports space, you compare the sports group at Onitangi Sports Park, you know, paying $1 a year for a lease. The council maintains the building, spends a lot of money on maintaining it and extending it, and, you know, all good stuff. But then you've got a building that's literally got holes in the wall and the roof down at the Austin Sports Club. And so it's important we keep both of those groups going and supported and positive. Yeah.
Good stuff. And this, just finally, the empowering communities idea. So, you know, we've been talking about how it works with spaces, but are there other examples of where community organisations are being supported, perhaps to move into areas that might have in the past been the council's realm?
Yeah, look, most definitely. And the Waiheke Resources Trust is an organisation that the local board is partnering with presently to deliver environmental restoration work on the island presently. And one of the challenges that we've found with Auckland Council, and there's no conspiracy here, but it's just by virtue of being a massive organisation with lots of different departments, is it was very, in fact, there was just no joined up approach to weed control and restoration on the island. And part and parcel with that, there was a default to using off-island contractors, and so we were losing every step of the way, and that our local contractors that are in tune with the community and our expectations weren't getting the work. The work often didn't make sense. And so by resourcing the Resources Trust to take on some of that work, it begins to get us into a space that we actually have, you know, one or two community not-for-profit vehicles like the Resources Trust and the Waiheke Weed Free Trust that we can actually begin to plug into other departments of council to pick up other work. And so the vision would be to see, you know, maybe in 5 years' time that all of the weed control and restoration work that's presently taking place across council, biosecurity, biodiversity, Auckland Transport, Auckland Council Properties, and is all actually being managed, you know, through a community organisation, which could then be either outreaching and sharing that model with other communities around the region and or looking at taking on some of that contracting work. So, you know, and a part of that there, you're getting the better environmental outcomes, you've got the potential to upskill and train and get young people on the island into that sort of work and or older people for that matter. So it's, you know, it's potentially has a lot of positives that run alongside it.
Okay, well, thanks very much, Paul, for coming in this morning.
Thank you, Chris.
And talking to us about the Empowered Communities initiatives that have been run through Auckland Council, what that means on the local scene.